Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning, Acadiana. This is Raymond Parch III, host of RP3 and Company, and you're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Cody Schutz, good morning to you, brother. How are you? Are you happy to see me back in the studios?
I am. It's been one of those weird things. You've been popping in and out a whole lot here lately, it seems, but maybe things are going to start to settle down a little bit. Football season is well on the horizon now. We are gearing up fully towards that. Major League Baseball is going into the final turn to head into the home stretch, so we're excited about that. Yeah, it should be a very, very exciting time.
It should be. That's right. Talking season, as they like to say, is now behind us.
And I'm good,
Fall
by the way.
Fall camp is coming.
I think you asked how I was. I don't know if I answered that. I'm good. I'm doing wonderful.
You did answer, but now you did. I appreciate that.
There you go.
We start off the day strong, my friend. We have a tremendous show lined up for you. We'll be talking all the scuttlebutt later about that new state-of-the-art locker room that LSU unveiled. It's causing quite a ruckus, not only regionally, but nationally, apparently. It's drew the ire of many a talking head about the state-of-the-art, nearly $30 million renovation to the locker room. We'll dive into that. We'll also be talking some New Orleans Pelicans, Houston Astros baseball. As always, they rolled to a win over the Athletics last night on Apollo night. We'll dive deep into that. We'll also be having David M. Grubb, host of Hard in the Paint, out of New Orleans, will be joining us in hour number two, talking Pels, also talking about an LSU legend finally getting his jersey retired. We'll also be talking with Jeff Palermo, Louisiana Radio Network, in hour number three. And then we'll also be talking to Andrew Juge, our friend from the Saints Happy Hour podcast. Training camp is this week. Rookies reported right before last weekend. Vets report this week, so we'll give you a New Orleans Saints training camp preview. Plus, we'll touch on this ridiculous report by Bleacher Report that ranks the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And trust me, you'll want to hear that. That'll be coming up in hour number two. But I want to start things off looking back at yesterday at Sunbelt Media Day down in New Orleans. Once again, even before Sunbelt Media Day, Raging Cajuns, Billy Napier heading into his second season as the head coach with that three-headed monster at running back, former Cecilia High star Raymond Calais, former ERAF star Elijah Mitchell, and Trey Regis. Got a ton of guys coming back on both sides of the line of scrimmage. Expectations are high. The coaches and members of the media selected the Raging Cajuns to repeat as Western Division champions. They also selected App State to repeat as Eastern Conference Eastern Division champions, and for the Mountaineers of Boone, North Carolina, to repeat as Sunbelt Conference champs. We had Billy Napier on the show yesterday. He talked about the expectations He talked about what he learned from year one to year two, that they're wanting to put things behind them, how they, or better yet, learn from how their season ended. Because remember, last year, they had some ups and downs. They had a rough patch there early on. They lost to Coastal Carolina, if you remember. And then they started putting together some wins. They ended the season strong, win the Western Division title, go to the conference championship game. But in the conference championship game, they got roughed up a little bit by App State, and then they laid an egg in the Cure Bowl versus Tulane, where they were just simply outplayed. And, you know, Billy talked about that on yesterday's show and how they're going to learn from that, how the coaching staff is learning from that, and how the players have learned from that. He also talked a lot yesterday about the guys that he brought along, why he picked them. And one of the guys was Deuce Wallace, and that's a local product of ours. He's from Lafayette, went to St. Thomas More. He's a redshirt senior defensive back for the Raging Cajuns. Now, he began, you know, this is a guy who has collegiate star blood running through his veins. His cousin, of course, is friend of the program, Kerry Joseph, former Meunice State Star CFL champion, currently an assistant coach at Southeastern Louisiana. He's also a cousin of former LSU running back Terrence McGee. Okay? And his father, Don Wallace, was a letterman at quarterback for the Raging Cajuns back when they were known as USL in the early 80s. Played for Jim Hightower at St. Thomas More, all district performer, captain his senior season. He also lettered in basketball. But Deuce joined the team in 2015 as a walk-on. Was redshirted that year. 2016, he was a member of the scout team. Did not see any playing time. Saw a brief amount of playing time that year as well. Saw the most playing time last year, 2018. Played in all 14 games, racked up 40 tackles, had a sack, had an interception, had a couple of pass deflections, forced fumble. His best year yet. And they expect big things out of Deuce Wallace leadership on and off the field this year. Now, the good brother Ben Love had Deuce on his show yesterday live from Sunbelt Media Day. And I want to play that interview with the former STM star. It was a good interview. You'll be impressed by this young man just as I have been and just as Ben was. This is Raging Cajun, redshirt senior defensive back, Deuce Wallace from yesterday's Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Our next guest, he's not going to protect your quarterback either. He's trying to pick him off. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports right back in on 103.7 The Game. We are live from 2019 Sunbelt Football Media Day. And our next guest prepped at St. Thomas More Catholic High School in Lafayette. Now a redshirt senior DB for the Raging Cajuns, Deuce Wallace. Deuce, how's it going today?
Going well, man. Thank you for having me.
You know, it's a pleasure. Let's go back to the prep days a little bit. We were talking off air. Your quarterback while at STM was?
William Bellamy.
He's still doing it, you know.
Oh, yeah. I saw a video of him yesterday.
Doing it at a pretty high level up in the Northeast. Take our listeners that either haven't seen it or they need to be refreshed through being awarded a scholarship after the spring game. I know that was in 2018, but yeah. What was that moment like for you and your family?
I mean, it was awesome. You know, I tell people all the time, it's been a really long process, you know. Being on scout team for 3 years, you know, at times you feel like you're ready, But just because you think you're ready doesn't mean that the coaches think you're ready, you know. So I just needed a little more grooming. And those are tough times, though, because usually, you know, you put in all the hard work, you feel like your work is in vain when you're not getting any, you know, I wouldn't say credit, but, you know, recognition at some point. But to be able to be awarded a scholarship, man, that meant the world to me. You know, that just confirmed that, no, my work did mean something. It did pay off finally.
Your first full year as a scholarship player under Ron Roberts, his first year obviously with the program, how would you describe his style of defense and then his style of coaching?
Well, I'll go with the style of coaching first. Is aggressive. It's intense, you know. It makes you sit on the edge of your seat. You know, but if you're not wired the right way as a defensive player, it might scare you a little bit, you know. You have to be wired differently to play on his defense. And I think that'll show this coming season. Because last year, I think we barely scratched the surface.
Well, tell me a little bit more about that. Deuce Wallace, our guest on 103.7 The Game, how was it just that last year, and you can almost feel that there's going to be more coming this year?
Because last year, like I've been saying all day, we were learning from week to week, you know. We had to install a whole defense, you know, in the spring, summer, which is not enough time. But we used last season, the 2018 season, as basically practice, you know. So now we've got 14 games under our belt going into year two, the same defense, same schemes. You know, we just, I think, loaded up our defense even more.
Describe your role in this defense. What do you do? Not just the productivity. Last year was 40 total tackles mm-hmm. and interception, but where all can the fans expect to see you line up, and where are they going to see you make plays?
I think they can expect still at the high safety, but I think they can expect me in the box a little more this year.
You like that part of your game?
I love that part. I love that part.
How much have you got to play at that level at St. Thomas More? Maybe a little bit of a fusion linebacker?
Not much.
Okay.
I play maybe, I probably count number of snaps on one hand, snaps of defense I played at St. Thomas More. But my focus was running back.
Who is your least favorite running back to see come through the hole and you got to square him up on your team? Which one of those really good backs?
I'm not going to name any of them because I don't want them to think that I fear any of them, you know.
That's a good play, right?
But
there.
I can say this: they're all tough to tackle. That's how talented they are. I can say that.
We talk about that a lot in the media. We say, "Hey, this has got to be one of the best running back rooms in the Sun Belt, maybe even the Group of Five." Is that just lip service, or you see that every
day? No, you said it best. We have one of the best running back rooms. Every single one of them in that room, from Trey Riggs, Eli Mitchell, Raymond Calais, T.J. Wisham, Ashton Johnson, Chris Smith, to all the walk-ons. It's just. It's a vibe that they all carry, you know?
Got a few more minutes here with Deuce Wallace. We are live inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Tell me about your fellow DBs, the guys that you got to play with last year that are returning, and then maybe some of the young ones that are starting to make an impression.
Yeah, man, we have a lot of guys actually coming back, which is even fun, you know? Not only coming back to the same defense, you get to come back with the same guys that you play with, the same guys you made mistakes with. You guys are both learning from the same mistakes, you know? Again, we got veteran guys like Tariq Miller coming back. You got guys that had limited action last year for whatever reason. Doesn't even matter. But Braylon Trahan, and now he's back in a big role. You have guys like Cam Solomon who's back. You know, it's really exciting. You have even guys stepping up from the walk-on like Cam Podesklo, who showed a lot of improvement this past spring. And then you can go to the quarter position. You have Mike Jaquette, who I still find impressive that he came from receiver, you know, and assumed a big cornerback role. Eric Guerra played as a freshman, did very well. Excited to get him back. That was one guy that came in very mature, you know. We have Kamar Greenhouse stepping up. We have a couple more freshman corners. Bobby Holmes, Amir McDaniel, guys that just can flat out play and just ready to compete. So I think we have a hefty group in the back end that's excited for this season.
Deuce, having played this game and then covered it even longer, I know what these next, say, 3 to 4 weeks are about. It's all about us. How do we get better? But is there certain parts of you that is looking ahead to Mississippi State and saying, I want that, and what is it that excites you about that game once you start to turn your attention toward them?
It excites me because that's a team that beat us pretty bad. They left us with a black eye last year. And not too many times do you get to play a team like that again the very next season, much less open up with them in the Superdome, you know. And that's fun to have. And we're going to meet him at a time where we have our players back healthy. You know, we missed Percy Butler last year. And even when he came back, he wasn't the same Percy Butler that, you know, you're going to see him as being this year. I was a guy who played an entire season with a hurt shoulder and produced, which is kind of scary. Yeah. So to have him back healthy, we're just excited, man.
How many family members have already hit you up for tickets for that game?
Honestly, not that many, you know, because I think they understand you can't just come out the woodworks when a big game is coming up, you know. But I appreciate them for not asking.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Look forward to being back here. Let's see, it's July 22nd, so I don't know, about 6 weeks or so.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it. Deuce, this was fun, too. Thank you, man.
Absolutely. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
And good luck on your season.
Thank you.
That was former STM Cougar and current redshirt senior defensive back for the Raging Cajuns, Deuce Wallace, local product. They're talking with Ben Love on yesterday's Bumper to Bumper Sports. Great local product, walk on, turned himself into a scholarship player. And there he was yesterday in New Orleans for Sunbelt Media Day representing the Raging Cajuns. So congratulations to that young man on his journey from walk on to starter to scholarship player to Sunbelt Media Day attendee. We're going to keep the Raging Cajun talk moving forward, though. Deuce wasn't the only one in attendance yesterday representing the Cajuns. Bam Jackson was there as well. We'll dive into that right after this break. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Deuce Wallace wasn't the only Raging Cajun at Sunbelt Media Day yesterday. His teammate, wide receiver, redshirt senior as well, Jared Jackson, better known as Bam Jackson, is expected to do big things for the Raging Cajuns this year. He joined Ben Love on Bumper to Bumper Sports yesterday afternoon, and here's a portion of that interview between Bam Jackson and Ben Love.
Bam Jackson, our guest wide receiver for the Raging Cajuns. He said, dude, you call me Jared, there's only going to be about one or two people in this world who know who you're talking to. Well, we got it right now. Bam, it's great to have you here. How's the day been?
Thank you. The day has been fun, man. I'm having a blast out here.
Tell me a little bit about it. You go shuffle around, the radio, the TV, everybody. What's it been like?
Man, I couldn't even tell you how many interviews I've done today. My head is just spinning. Oh, Bam, we need you to come do this. Oh, Bam, you're up over here. Oh, Bam, you got to do this. I'm like, okay, whatever you need me to do, I'm going to do it.
How would you describe your path at UL and getting to where you are now, a redshirt senior, a leader on this team? You're representing them here at Media Day. Take us from when you started till today.
When I first came in, you know, I was, you know, big guy freshman, had dreams of starting as a true freshman, playing, you know, things kind of got derailed when I got hurt my freshman year. But, you know, when I came back and I finally got back to my old self, you know, I had a couple of ups and downs. But, you know, going through all of that early in my career to now, is it was totally worth it. I wouldn't want it any other way, because it molded me into what I am today.
And a season ago, 19 receptions, 325 yards, and 4 touchdowns. Bam Jackson, our guest on 103.7 The Game. How do you feel like you're going to be better this year?
I feel like I'm a better route runner now. And, you know, by this being my second go-round in the offense, you know, I know it. I know it more than I knew it last year. So by me knowing more of the offense, I'm able to play a whole lot faster. And, you know, I've been working on my speed and my strength. So that'll help me elevate my game.
Do you like having a head coach who's so intimately involved with the offense? And if so, why?
Yeah, I love it because, you know, it's not too many times that you have the head coach as your offensive coordinator. So, you know, by him personally calling our plays, I could go ask him, hey, coach, what is this? How do I, you know, what do you need me to do for this play? And, you know, like, having information like that come from your head coach is somewhat of a special value.
How special can this receiving core be this year? And give a shout out to some of the guys you know that'll be lining up next to you.
We got a chance to be one of the best in the conference, if not the best in the conference. You know, guys like myself, Jamarcus, Khalif, Brian, Jamal Bell, and some of the other guys. Caleb Carter, if he gets a chance to play, he got burners too. You know, all of us in that receiver room, we work. You know, we put in work together. Oh, and Devin Pauley and Pat Hughes and Deron Williams. You know, all of us work. We work every day. After every workout, we catch jugs. After OTAs in the summer, we catch jugs. And, you know, all of us are unselfish. We don't worry about our touches. You know, only time we worry about touches is when we're trying to help. if they're shutting our running game down, we're like, hey, coach, you need to throw the ball to help get our running backs out. You know,
and they listen.
And they listen. So, you know, it's,
wow.
You know, we just ready to blow. We're ready to blow up this year.
And what about Coach Leger? What's it like going under his tutelage? I don't mind telling you, occasionally I work out at the same place as him and his wife. That man gets after it. I'm serious. At his age, he gets after it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he get after us sometimes, too, in the film room. But that dude, like his attention to detail, just about the smallest thing that the viewer on TV wouldn't understand. But he gets on us about, like, small things, just from stance and start being sloppy in practice. He'll get mad, and that'll be our whole focus for the whole next day of practice. So he gets after us too at practice and in the film room. You know, he's always intense. He jokes, but when it's business time, that dude is all business for the most part.
Cajun's wide receiver Bam Jackson with us for another moment or two on 103.7 The Game. I know that you prepped at East St. John. Did you grow up in Reserve?
I'm from La Place.
Okay.
So I've been trying to get my nameplate changed since my freshman year, but they never changed it. But I'm really from La Place. Other people pronounce it as La Place, but I don't say it like that.
I'm from Baton Rouge. I'm going to take your word for it. It's La Place. Then you go a little bit further, and you're where we are right now in New Orleans. What does this city mean to you? Coming back, you're doing something really cool right now, but then your team gets to do it again, taking on Mississippi State in the Dome. What's that mean to you?
It's special, man. You know, growing up in Louisiana, it's just having a chance of playing the Superdome is special because anybody that has ever played football in Louisiana can relate to the statement. It's always been a dream to play in the Dome. Ever since you was growing up, you always dreamed about playing in the state championship in the Superdome, a state championship weekend, the first weekend of December. You know, that's every kid dream growing up in Louisiana. And, you know, by us having the opportunity to open up the season here and then having a chance to possibly close out our season in the same building, playing there twice in one season, that's special. So we know what's ahead of us. We just got to put in the work that's needed for it.
Your quarterback, Levi Lewis, where was he maybe this time last year, and where is he right now?
Right now, compared to last year, Levi is light years ahead of what he was. Light years ahead of what he was. He's always had that locked-in mentality and laser focus about him, but this year and this summer, this spring, he's took it to a totally different level. And it benefits everybody. It benefits the offense when he's throwing the ball around that practice real good, and it's benefiting the defense too because it's teaching those guys how to play the ball in the air and how to tighten up their coverage too at the same time.
But then you get to pay off and you get to play football here in the Dome not too long from now. Like you said, hopefully twice this year.
Right.
Bam Jackson's been our guest. Bam, good luck this season.
Thank
Stay
you.
Healthy. Play well.
Thank you.
That was Bam Jackson. More RP3 and Company after this break on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We let off today's show looking back. Yesterday, Sunbelt Media Day, Raging Cajuns took the stage. They were the closer, last team up to close out the Media Day session. We played a couple interviews that Ben Love had exclusively with two stars, Bam Jackson and Deuce Wallace, there for the Raging Cajuns. That's what we let off the show about. Expectations are high for the Cajuns. Predicted to, once again, repeat as Sunbelt Western Division champions to play in the conference championship game and get back to a bowl game just like they did last year. While we were on the air yesterday, though, we mentioned a story that broke over the weekend that LSU had unveiled its new nearly $30 million renovation project to its football operations building, and particularly the locker room. And the locker room is state-of-the-art, wall-to-wall lights, AirPods for the players. The lockers don't have any blocked viewpoints. It's open air. It's sleek. It's modern. It is fancy pants. There's cup holders, as Cody pointed out yesterday. Well, by the time, about an hour or so after we got off the air, the story, which was at the beginning very celebratory, because of LSU players' reaction to it and the LSU football community's reaction to it was very celebratory. Well, that all changed because regionally people started being highly critical. Social media was just caught like wildfire negativity about this. People are showing pictures of the student library, or the library there for the students on campus. Why is the library in such bad conditions and it needs repairs when the football team's getting all this? So forth and so forth. And I'll dive into that. The basic gist of it is because the football facility upgrades were done by donations, by boosters, and people specifically donating money for that reason. They're not donating money to the university, and the university's not choosing not to use that money to repair the library. The money used to bankroll the new locker room, ladies and gentlemen, was donated specifically to bankroll the new locker room because those people are not interested in bankrolling the renovations to the library.
Well, that's a whole third conversation to be had about where the donations, you know, whatever. That's not what I...
Where they should go or everything. That's a different discussion.
And where they should go, we don't have any say-so in that because it's someone else's money, and I'm not going to tell someone else what to do with their money. If you have millions of dollars and you want to donate it to the football program and not the library, that's your prerogative. No judgment from
Correct.
Me. But I think there's one tweet out there, and you retweeted it as well, which is where I found it, that sums up this whole... ordeal as far as, oh, why is the library this and the football locker room that? Michael Divinity tweeted out yesterday, "Attention all Louisiana State University students and graduate students. The money for our new facility was a private donation from members of TAF and football alumni. Thank you."
Yep.
That was all he said.
Yep. But yet, that didn't stop people from getting fired up about it. That didn't stop people from being critical of it, not only regionally, but nationally. Dan Patrick's show can be listened to live right here every day on 103.7 The Game, Monday through Friday. It's on from 9 to 11, with the exception of Tuesdays and Thursdays when it's only on from 10 to 11. But we carry the Dan Patrick Show, one of the most heralded sports talk show hosts in the country. And it was a topic of discussion yesterday on their show. We're going to play a portion of that right now.
Guys, college football, I can't wait. Little nugget of college football. You know, Ed Orgeron, he's the coach for a couple years down at LSU. He's kind of old school throwback guy, kind of gruff, talks like this. He's really throwing back with LSU. Ground and pound, old school. Even they redid the locker rooms and they went completely old time, bare bones, just get it done, work ethic. Actually, they didn't do that whatsoever. It looks like a spaceship. Here's LSU's new locker rooms. Those are the pods for each player. This is the locker room. Each player has his own pod where he could watch tape, rest, recover, and, you know, nap if need be. They fold out like those first class seats on Virgin America going overseas or whatever. Every player has one.
Wait, let me get this straight.
Go ahead.
In lieu of paying the players,
right, you get a napping unit.
You get an incredible workplace with all the bells and whistles.
Why does that sound familiar?
Oh. What is that about?
Wow. What are you referring? If you would like to get into the transfer portal, you can. Feel free, Andy. I'm sure there are a lot of places that'd be interested in you.
That folds out, by the way.
Does it?
That does fold out if you need to.
Feel free.
There are mathletic teams that might be interested in this.
Yeah. Mad Dog Radio's hiring, I'm sure.
During the live look-in, we showed LSU's new locker rooms. Wow. So you have those pods that you sleep in. If you get like business class or first class and you're going to Europe and you get those pods that you get to sleep in, every one of the lockers in LSU's football locker room, they have these pods there, personal TVs there. And we always get around to the same discussion. Well, why don't they just pay the players? Well, they can afford this and they have the money to pay for this. They can't afford to be able to pay the players from the standpoint of how do you justify what your starting quarterback makes to the third-string quarterbacks and what he's going to make. Or you start at LSU and you start at USC. How do I pay you? Instead, they go, hey, look at what we got you. We can't pay you, but we got you something really nice. Look at this locker room. And this is great for recruiting, too. But let's say I gave you minimum wage. And I know I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but we just showed LSU's locker room. But let's say you got minimum wage. You play Division I revenue-producing sports. Can I pay you minimum wage? You file for taxes. You get to use your name and likeness for something that is marketed specifically involving you. How about that? Because you just can't pay them because we haven't come up with a formula that is going to be equitable for everybody involved in this. And what if you play in a revenue-producing sport or something that you wouldn't consider revenue-producing? Let's say it's a baseball, like Florida State. I don't know how many people they get for their games, but let's say their baseball program gets 5,000. And that's more than some other Division I team gets for their attendance. I don't know how to do it where it's equitable. And the NCAA does not want to go. They didn't want to dip their toe into this. You know, they like, you get Pell Grants, and you get the food, and you get books and shoes and all. You get all of this stuff. You get to go to a bowl game. You know, you get an iPad, you know, all these things. I just don't know if you can do it where you go, okay, that makes sense. But if I pay you minimum wage, where's the cutoff? Where's the cutoff to, is it the power conferences? Because then that helps them even more. You know, revenue producing sports? Do you have to be in the plus? Like you have in the positive here?
Do seniors make more than freshmen? Right? There's so many variables.
That was a clip from yesterday's Dan Patrick show. So
it's a whole lot to unpack.
So we'll try to do it. So Dan took it as an opportunity to look at paying players.
I'm glad you brought it. I know you have a spiel, but thank you for, because that was my initial thought, was that I didn't even think of this in that argument until they brought it up. And maybe it, from what you're about to tell me, maybe that's shame on me. Maybe I should be looking at it that way, but Dan Patrick and his guys took this in a direction that my mind never even went. And maybe that's because I'm an LSU fan, so I look at it differently. But that was my initial thought. Whoa, okay, that's what this is about.
Some of the regional statewide reaction was talking about the library, right? And the library there on campus at LSU is a little bit in disarray, so forth and so forth, okay? And why are the LSU football players getting preferential treatment? Well, once again, a booster and a foundation that's directly linked to the football program had decided to raise the money or donate the money or whatever they wanted to do for that particular reason. Once again, can't tell people what they can do with their money and what they can't do, okay? We just can't. You can't go down that rabbit hole to be like, well, you know, it's not fair to all the other all the other sports aren't football. I hate to be that way. They're just not, okay? They're just not. And when football makes money and football has a lot of money, guess what? That money trickles down to all the other sports as well, okay? Jerseys are being able to be purchased, whatnot. That'll be a discussion that we can have for a separate day.
Right, because if I was playing devil's advocate, I would say to that, then, because you're right, but the flip side of that coin is, does that then in the long term run a huge detriment to the sports scene in the United States in general, because now kids know growing up, okay, well, if I want to actually make money while playing sports in college, I need to play football. And then you see baseball wane off because kids aren't playing that anymore. Basketball maybe goes the same way. And then, you know, obviously soccer would fall off incredibly. The small sports would almost disappear, I would say, because you know if you're going to make any kind of money before going pro, you need to do it in football. If I'm playing devil's advocate is all I'm saying.
And the flip side of that is that if you're talented enough in baseball, you don't even have to go to college, right?
That's a good point. Basketball may go back.
Trying to get rid of the one and done.
Okay,
rule.
Okay.
So
counterpoint, but yeah.
But it's a valid point. That could be a discussion, kind of go down that rabbit hole. So that's one point. But what Dan and the guys, the Danettes, decided to do was, go down it a different way and about paying for players. And Dan does make a valid point on stating how, if we ever get to the point of wanting to pay college athletes, how do you scale it? Will it be done by each university's, you know, will each university be able to kind of scale it? Do you pay football players more because that's more of a revenue-generating sport? Do you pay tennis players less? What about the bowling team? You know, I'm being facetious, but there's multiple different athletic teams at every university. How do you divvy that money up? And Dan's idea is actually pretty brilliant. You just pay everyone minimum wage, right? You can have your likeness to market yourself if you'd like to, and you get paid minimum wage, and you'll get the money once you leave or however you want to do it. I've also heard that like a kind of like a trust where each semester that you're working there, it goes into a trust, and when you leave the school, then you get access to the amount of money that you've accumulated during that time. But it's interesting that I can guarantee you that the folks at LSU had no idea whatsoever that showing a video on social media and posting a story on the website about new locker rooms that look like they were made in the belly of a spaceship from a DC Universe movie would have never thought that their reaction would have been as fiery locally, regionally, statewide, and nationally about it. And once again, I go back to the point, you may not like it. You may not think it's fair that football players at a major university get their own special nutritional game plan and that they have iPads that are given to them to, quote-unquote, watch film, okay? And that they have these AirPods in their locker room and that they can watch their own TVs and they have all these amenities that other students, the average student, does not have on campus. That if you're studying to be a business major or that you're studying for nursing, you don't have those amenities at your disposal because you're not a football player at LSU. You're exactly correct. But I hate to be this one. Life's not fair. Certain people get other things. And the flip side of that argument is, okay, you may have to struggle while you're in college as a nursing student, but if you're going to get your degree in nursing, you're setting yourself up to have a great job for 20, 30 years. That kid that's playing football at LSU that may not make it in the league may be back home bagging groceries in 5 years while you're having a great career and a great house and two cars and two kids and three pets and, you know, the whole nine yards. Life tends to, you know, balance itself out to begin with. I'm going to keep this discussion going in the next segment. We'll close out the hour about it. If you want to join us, call the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. Just in Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're talking last segment about LSU's new football operations and performance nutrition center, showcasing a project that costs nearly $28 million to renovate. But it has started a fiery debate. It erupted all over social media. We talked a little bit about what Dan Patrick had to say about how, you know, this led him to thinking, how can we pay for players? Because we're going down that road. It's eventually going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. It may not happen the next 2 to 3 years, but it's eventually going to happen probably within the next decade. He took it down that road after seeing the facilities there at LSU, first-class style locker room. But in the hours since the big reveal, athletes, both past and present, have taken to social media to question and defend the renovations at its cost. Once again, the project was paid for with private donations to the athletic department there at LSU. And that includes the addition of nearly 25,000 square feet with a new training room, offices, locker room, players' lounge, and a cafeteria. Questions on social media, though, did surface while also pointing out the shape of the university's library. The Chronicle of Higher Education, the Advocate is reporting, published a story with the headline, LSU just unveiled a $28 million football facility. The flood-damaged library is still decrepit. LSU Manship School of Mass Communication professor Robert Mann spotlighted one of the LSU football team's tweets from the newly renovated locker room, adding, quote, meanwhile, across campus, I vacuum my faculty office with the dust devil I bought at Walmart. Mann, previously a columnist for the TimesPicayune and NOLA.com, wrote a column in 2016 about LSU's library decay, calling it a symbol of Louisiana's misplaced priorities. In a now-deleted response, LSU quarterback Joe Burrow replied to Mann, quote, why, professor, do you feel entitled to the fruits of our labor? End quote. Oh.
I don't know if I condone that. You know, you won. Just chill.
Whoa.
You know what I mean? You won. You got your locker room. Just chill.
But you know how that works. You know how that went over in that locker room, though, right?
That's great. I mean, let the team do that, but keep it to the team.
The players got nothing but love for Joe. I mean, they love Joe as it is,
I know, and I get it, but I mean, you got your
once gig. Once again, we talked about Michael Divinity. Cody had pointed out what he said. The money for our new facility was a private donation. Linebacker Patrick Queen also chimed in, shared Divinity's response, adding, say it louder. Crazy people from your own school can't stand to see us be happy for something we worked for and didn't cost a penny out of their pocket.
I know where Patrick Queen came from. I know what high school he went to. I've been through the halls of that high school hundreds of times. He came from nowhere. He came from very little as far as with the high school facilities that he worked with.
Now, once again, Eric Reed, we know he is socially active, former LSU great, currently plays for the Carolina Panthers. He used this as an opportunity about the payment of players. He tweeted this out. The locker room when I was at LSU 7 years ago was better than the current one in Carolina, but there's no money to compensate these young men for the revenue they bring to the school. Hashtag just saying. Once again, this is not going to go away. That's going to do it for hour number one here on RP3 and Company. When we come back, Bleacher Report released its all-time best quarterbacks. Drew Brees didn't make the top 10. There you go. We'll talk about it right here on Acadia at a Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me thanks draft is here, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk through the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of RP3 and Company. We're right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. It is 7:03 in the morning on this Tuesday. We spent a good portion of hour number one talking college football. We went back and reran a couple of interviews that the good brother Ben Love had yesterday from Sunbelt Media Day, as he had Deuce Wallace and Bam Jackson, both Raging Cajun stars, interviewed them about the upcoming season. And we dove into the LSU locker room social media firestorm. If you want to join in on that, share your opinions on that, we got a new poll question up right now on 1037thegame.com. Do you feel LSU state-of-the-art locker room is too much? It's the poll question of the day. You can find it on our homepage. You can vote just simply yes or no. You can also call us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline and give us your thoughts about it, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We got somebody on the ARCO Equipment Hotline ready to share his thoughts. It's our good friend, Doc. Doc, how you doing this morning, brother?
Doing well, Ray. Doing well. Look, I don't have any problems with the locker room. And I think, the issue with the library is, you know, it sounds like the library needs to get a library foundation to fund and fundraise like TAF does. I mean, I remember when they were trying to build Mike's thing, they had people every single game. Would you like to collect or give, donate? Would you like to donate to the foundation? I mean, if the library needs that type of repair, where's the support from the community? Instead of fussing about it, bitching about it, why don't we try to do fundraising and then we can fund that money just to the library? And then they would be able to fix it. Now, the thing about the paying players, man, the only thing I think that you can't really do about that is, I mean, with Title IX, you have to pay everybody, and you have to pay everybody the same amount. You have a university support system that can barely, you know, supposedly they can't even afford to pay their teachers the same amount. And if you're going to put that type of strain on a school, and it's not just, say, LSU, what about UL, La Tech? And you're saying that La Tech now has to pay its football, its basketball, women's, men's, its gymnastics, its swimming, its bowling. I mean, I think that the financials from that standpoint would drive a lot of smaller schools out of it. And then you add taxes involved on minimum wage. So you could say that if it's minimum wage in California and they're taxing 50%, well, in Louisiana we're only taking 33%.
Right.
So they're paying more in Louisiana. And I think the logistics of that type of and the financial burden that it would put on the institutions, I just don't know if that's viable.
Doc. You know? Let me ask you this because I want to keep this conversation going. What do you think, and I've heard this before, and this is something that I actually kind of agree with. What if you put together like a trust, and it can be funded however you want to, and the student-athlete can have that, right, and the student-athlete can receive that after they graduate or after they leave school by a certain amount of time. They'll have access to it, whether it be a year. You can whatever requirement you can do, each school can do that. Do you think that would be a better model?
The only thing about that would be is it still goes to who's funding the trust. You know, where's that money going to go? And if you're going to make a trust, can you make a trust just for football? Because last time we talked about it, I didn't even think about, you know, you can't just say this is a trust for football players. You know, this trust has to be set up for all student athletes. And because, you know, there's no way legally, at least I don't think, that they're going to allow it to say, well, you know, again, it's going to be their part. Well, we can't just set this up for the football players. We have to do this for every athlete. And then, so where's that money going to come from? Even if it's a trust, I mean, I'd say, how's that working out for our social security system in the nation? You know, that's a trust, supposedly.
Supposedly.
That we're all supposed to fund in. And you know, it's still the money still has to come from somewhere to put into it. And I think just the financial burdens of it, I just don't see how we can even do that. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I mean.
No, it's not easy, Doc, and I agree with you. I don't think – I think we want to view it in a way we react in these kind of things in a kind of Band-Aid way, right? And it's not that Dan Patrick's viewpoint on this of paying a minimum wage. It's not a bad idea. It's just – how do you logistically handle this? Because it's not a football thing. It is, if you're going to do it for the football players, you have to do it for the lacrosse. You have to do it for women's soccer. You have to do it across the board, athletics across the board. And then you're going to be involved with, how much do you pay? Is it scale? You know, and where's the money going to be coming from? Because as we've known, there's several universities in our own state that have struggled with
Their own payments.
Right, making their own payments. So terrific, terrific points as always, Doc. Appreciate the phone call, brother.
And, you know, so the other thing, I mean, I think, and then, you know, as far as library goes, I mean, that's a, yeah, I mean, why isn't there, I mean, these people can fuss and complain about it. Well, this is a proactive movement. Start a GoFundMe. We got people that are going fund because they can't, you know, buy meals. There are ways that they can do that. If the library is in that bad of shape, these activists, I think, should take more of a role in trying to set up something and do something instead of just sitting there and going on social media and complaining about it. Get off your butt and quit typing. Anyway, all right.
Thank you, Doc. I appreciate it. He makes a valid point. why not do something about that? I mean, there's new dorms that are being built and everything like that. Why be the guy just to react to the football players? Why not be proactive and try to take care of the library without being negative about it, I guess, is what I would ask Professor Mann. We're going to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Welcome on yet another caller. Chuck is on the line. Chuck, good morning to you. How are you this morning?
And how y'all doing today?
We're doing great. We're doing great.
Yeah, I think what Ellis is doing is just the nature of the beast that is college football. They're trying to keep up with the Joneses. But this started with Oregon many years ago. Oklahoma State, T-Bone Pickens gave him $123 million. And then 2 years later, in 2018, he gave him $263 million. That they're raising to improve the athletic facilities. And it's funny, no one talked about Alabama that has a $900 million sports revamping over the next 10 years. So it's just college football is just keeping up with the Joneses. It just costs a lot of money. And the athletic fund is the Tiger Athletic Fund. It's about athletics. F. King Alexander and the alumni funding, they should be working on, as the previous caller said, on trying to improve the library and, just separate things, Just separate entities. And our university does need to improve, but those other guys need to be proactive, like you stated.
Thank you, Chuck. I appreciate that. Chuck makes a valid point. It's an arms race. We talked about it on yesterday's show. It's an absolute arms race. Alabama does that. And a big thing about the Alabama point, they didn't do that as much until Saban got there. And Saban's like, this is what I want. This is what we need. You're going to build this. You're going to build this. And you know what happened? Donors came out, people with money, multimillionaires, corporations came out and said, okay, here's a check. That's how it works. College football is big business. It is a multi-million dollar industry, billion-dollar industry at college athletics is. If people want to donate, like T. Boone Pickens, who is a billionaire, he wants to fund Oklahoma State. That's his passion project. That's what he's choosing to do with his money. Now, T. Boone Pickens does a lot of other things with his money as well, but he chooses to prop up Oklahoma State and try to improve their athletics because he wants to see his alma mater succeed.
Same with Phil Knight in Oregon.
Thank you. That's where Oregon got all their money because Phil Knight of Nike decided, I want to do something for my university.
That's why Maryland, who has what claim to actual athletic dominance in sports, that the major four sports, Maryland has no claim to any of that, but Maryland has incredible facilities and has awesome uniforms because the guy that runs Under Armour graduated from Maryland.
That is correct. It's all about, look, at the end of the day, I understand if I was a student, not a student athlete, if I was a student at LSU, yeah, I would be pissed off about the state of the library. You're right. Absolutely, I would be. But I'd be going to my university officials and asking them why that is. And I wouldn't be pointing fingers going, well, the football team's getting this. Once again, the football team's renovations to their locker room are private donations. Private donations. So if someone, look, those same students wouldn't, and that Professor Mann, would not be bellyaching if someone made a private donation to the library or to the Mass Comm building or to his facilities as the instructor there for communications and decided not to share that money with the football team. There wouldn't be any write-ups. There wouldn't be any social media rants about that. So why is it about football? I understand that you feel that you're neglected. Take it up with your university president. Take it up with them. It's not the football team's fault, and it's not the player's fault, and it's not Coach Ed Orgeron's fault, or even the athletic department's fault, that someone wants to donate to them and not donate to your library and not donate to a classroom setting. That is the state of college athletics in this century. Plain and simple. Go ahead. You had something to say.
Yeah, I just have two things that I want to say. The first is that LSU right now, because this whole argument and Dan Patrick and the guys kind of coming down on LSU, this locker room, that's, I think, got a lot to do because just because LSU is the latest to do it, that's what's in the news right now.
Slow news day. It's talking season. Well, it's that's like, another part.
Right.
And it hit like wildfire because There ain't no training camp just hasn't begun yet. Right. Rookies reported, not vets yet.
It's like what Chuck said. Chuck pointed out that Alabama has some, sounded like almost a $1 billion renovation happening over the next decade or so. No one's, you know, hammering Alabama on that right now because they didn't just put a video out on Twitter of all their guys freaking out and going crazy into the locker room. So when Alabama does that and they unveil it, I'm sure then they will also come under fire and all, oh, where is this money for this and that and blah, blah, blah. So I think a lot of this has to do with just because LSU is the latest team to do it. They're in the public eye right now for this incredible state-of-the-art locker room. I wanted to make that point, but you got me thinking about something else, and so did everybody else that called in. We're not complaining, but pointing out that if, you know, the library needs to be better, then we need to start some kind of fund and get money towards specifically for other things on LSU's campus to make them, you know, upgraded or whatever have you. I want to pose a question to you, Ray, and to you listening, and I would love to get your take on it. 337-706-0111, Twitter as well, at 1037 the game. Would you donate money to the library at LSU? You personally, I'm asking you Raymond, and you listening, a personal question. You know, we love this LSU locker room. It's amazing for the football team. Thank you to whoever all went and donated these millions of dollars to make. But if we're going to, you know,
I've made donations to my alma mater that had nothing to do with athletic facilities.
Well, there you go. See, that's my
But that's my personal choice.
Right. Right. But, and everyone's different. But if we're going to say that, oh, we should, and not everybody is saying this, but the group of people that are saying that, you know, oh, they should upgrade this or they should, would you donate money to the LSU library and not the football program? Would you make a point of saying, I don't, this money's not going for athletics. This needs to go to the library. I don't think there are near as many people that would answer yes to that question as probably would we would like.
I would agree with that because we're so obsessed with college athletics. I take the standpoint me and my wife do when we make some type of donation or use our time for charity reasons. It's something that is being neglected. So we make a conscious effort. I've done this in the past. I went to a junior college. I've donated to that junior college. They had a baseball, softball team. I didn't play either one of those, and I didn't donate to that.
Right.
Okay. So, but yes, you can make you can make those choices. But once again, why are we hearing that this is my great thing? And maybe Professor Mann's whole intention, Cody, is to use this opportunity about all the buzz about the LSU locker room as a chance to, once again, bring people's focus back to the issue with the library and hopefully spare people to donate to that. The problem with that is this. It comes off petty and it comes off small and it comes off that you're whining.
Because you mentioned your dustbuster in the...
Right. Why not say, hey, this
is great. Why isn't
there a link? Why not say, hey, this is great that this is happening for the university, but our library needs help. Please go here. Here's a GoFundMe page or email this person to help this. Instead of using that as an opportunity, he got into his feelings and...
Which it happens.
It happens, but made it worse. Now you're going to have people that may have been on the fence about helping out your library that are going to be pissed off because you were petty about it. Right. And they're going to be like, you know what? Screw you. I'm not giving money to your library. He made it worse. He didn't make it better. He had an opportunity to bring a spotlight to the university and its need to do something with the library. And instead, he kind of made it about himself.
You can still fix it, hopefully. You know,
you would assume a professor would be able to.
So hopefully he can get out in front of it. I mean, there needed to be, you nailed it, there needed to be a link to a, here's where you can go donate directly to LSU academics here. Here's a link for a GoFundMe. Here's a link for this foundation. Instead of giving people an outlet to voice their frustration in a proactive and productive way.
He had LSU football players tweeting back at him.
If you would have put a link out there, I bet you, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that link would have gotten retweeted, you know, over and over and over again.
By LSU football players.
And yet here we are talking about a dustbuster.
I mean, it said you wanted to talk
about
it.
And we're not ripping on this professor. That's not what we're doing either. Don't come off that way. It's just there were opportunities here that...
Opportunity was missed.
But not completely. I think it can still be salvaged. So it's just the initial opportunity absolutely missed here.
Make sure to vote on this issue. We got a poll question up on 1037thegame.com on the homepage on the right-hand side. You can also give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. We teased it. We're going to get to it this next segment. Bleacher Report ranked the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Drew Brees not in the top 10. Guess who's in the top 25? I'll give you a tease. Alex Smith. Yeah, yeah. Go ahead and get fired up about that. We'll talk about it next segment right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. So Bleacher Report decided to do a Bleacher Report thing and released its top 25 NFL quarterbacks of all time yesterday. And the more I look at this list, Cody, the more angry I just become. Because I just want to go, what the hell? Who?
Don't work yourself into a shoot,
oh,
brother.
Oh, God. Okay, so they did a top 25 quarterbacks of all time. Drew Brees is 11. Okay? John freaking Elway is 12. I can make an argument that Elway needs to be in the top three. John Elway is number 12 on Bleacher Report's list of the top 25 quarterbacks of all time. It's as if they're like, well, his decisions running the front office of the Denver Broncos is why we're going to put him down the list.
All he is a helicopter play. That's all he is.
Oh, Jesus. So, okay. I want to give you your top five, which I have no problem with. Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Joe Montana, Dan Marino, Johnny Unitas. Okay. That's a good top five, a very good top five. I would probably put Elway up there, but that's me. Six is Troy Aikman.
Nope.
I know he's got the three Super Bowls. I know he's got the three Super Bowls, and he made big-time plays, and he was a hell of a quarterback. But he also had Michael Irvin and Emmitt Smith, okay? He's a little overrated, in my opinion. I'm just not saying that because he's a Cowboy. Joe Namath, okay, you want to give respect to Broadway Joe? I'm all about that. Plus, he went to Alabama, so I got no problem with that. Captain America, Roger Staubach, deserves to be in the top 10 on any list. Absolutely. See, I don't hate the Cowboys. He should be higher than freaking Troy Aikman. Terry Bradshaw is always a polarizing guy. He's number 9 here because he's got the four Super Bowl rings, but people say that he was overrated. And look at the great teams that he played on, and he was more of a quote-unquote, guy that just wouldn't cost you a game. Kurt Warner is 10. I love Kurt Warner. I love Kurt Warner's story. I love the fact that he tore it up on the greatest show on turf and then reinvigorated his career once again with the Arizona Cardinals, helping lead them to a Super Bowl game. But you're trying to tell me that Kurt Warner's better than Drew Brees and John Elway? And Steve Young and Jim Kelly, you are absolutely high.
All-time leader in passing yards.
You are huffing paint thinner is what you're doing, Bleacher Report. Kurt Warner deserves to be on this list. But number 10? Number 10? Oh, God. We already talked about Brees being 11, Elway 12, Young 13, Jim Kelly 14. Big Ben, who doesn't really understand the true definition of boundaries when it comes to ladies, is 15.
Now, let me ask you a question real quick. Two questions, back to back. Rapid fire answer, okay?
Give them to me.
Who's better, Philip Rivers or Brett Favre?
Brett Favre.
Who's better, Philip Rivers or Aaron Rodgers?
Aaron Rodgers.
Bleacher Report disagrees.
Oh, yeah, we're got to get to that. Because I love Philip Rivers. I love Philip Rivers for talking trash to Jay Cutler when they played in the same division. And I love Philip Rivers for deciding that he wants to repopulate the earth by himself with him and his wife. Because they have like 17 children. So, Philip Rivers is 16. Brett Favre is 17. Aaron Rodgers is 18.
This is where the list completely falls apart.
I got nothing but love for Tony Romo. Romo is 19. They got Drew Bledsoe on this list.
He's on the list.
He's on the list.
He's not even last.
Drew Bledsoe is on the list. Carson Palmer.
The next guy, too. What is he on there for?
And they got Bob Greasy on here at 22. Bob Greasy? Bob Greasy?
No Donovan McNabb. No Steve McNair. Like, none of these. No. No Dante Culpepper. Not nothing. These guys.
Phil Sims is on there at 23. Phil Sims, who lost his job to Jeff Hostetler, is on there. Warren Moon is 24. That is absolute disrespect. Warren Moon probably threw the absolute prettiest spiral deep ball I've ever seen in my entire life. He's 24, And to cap off the ridiculousness from Bleacher Report is who comes in at 25. The 25 greatest quarterbacks of all time. Alex Smith.
That's a joke. That's a rib. They're ribbing us on that one.
Alex Smith is 25. Alex Smith is 25.
Donovan McNabb must be so mad. Like, so mad.
I don't even know. Where's Kenny Stabler?
Where's Michael Vick?
Where? I am worked up into an absolute tizzy now. And we're going to be bringing on our friend David M. Grubb, the host of Hard in the Paint, will be joining us to talk Pels, talk a jersey retirement for LSU. We'll ask him about this damn list as well. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Right now, it's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our first guest of the day. He's a writer for CrescentCitySports.com as well as TheBirdWrites.com. And he's the host of the upcoming Hard in the Paint with David Grubb, which begins on August the 5th on Sports 1280 AM. It's the one and only David Grubb. David, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing well. Unfortunately, I'm not the only. I looked myself up on Google once, and there's like 30 of them up there. So, but yeah, well, I'm the only one you know, so that's good.
David, I appreciate you making some time for us, man. I want to get to the Pels in a little bit, but I want to start things off with a topic that I know you're immensely passionate about a former LSU star that you've gotten to know, that you've wrote stories about, and that you're just over the moon for it finally happened. One of the greatest to ever do it is finally getting his jersey retired. Your thoughts on the news that came out yesterday that LSU is finally doing the right thing by one of their greats?
Yeah, about November of last year, it just kind of struck me again. I been going to the PMAC for years, you know, covering the team, but also just watching games and looking up in those rafters. Something was missing to me, and I know it was missing for a lot of people, and it was that number 35 that belonged to the guy that we knew at the time as Chris Jackson and now is Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. And it wasn't right. And you celebrate the greats, and there are a few players in college basketball who have the resume that he had, two-time All-American, still holds a freshman scoring record. It's just he had an unbelievable career, and for whatever reason, his name wasn't up there with Shaquille O'Neal and Bob Pettit and Rudy Macklin. And so I felt like it something needed to be said. So in November, I wrote the piece, and I got word that it had reached him, and it had stoked some emotions in Mahmoud. And so some people who are connected with LSU, some alums, alumni, and they contacted me and said, hey, can you keep this going? Because he's conflicted about it. You know, it was some hard feelings. I think for a lot of athletes, when you feel like you've done something and you've put your life, you know, your blood, sweat, and tears into something, and your accomplishments aren't as respected as you think that they may be, there's some sensitivity. And he was sensitive about it. And when we finally got to meet face-to-face in February of this year, we talked about that. And he talked about just the feelings of being a college athlete, coming to LSU, feeling a little disconnected from the regular student body, doing all these things, going all over the world. But this one little piece still was gnawing at him. And I think it's great for the university. It's great for him. It's great for college basketball. But I think, you know, the biggest thing is that it reconnects this icon of LSU's probably greatest extended period, that period between, between his start, Shaquille, those years when just LSU was a national program under Dale Brown, maybe the most exciting period, maybe not its most successful, but its most exciting period. And I think it brings them back as a university and an individual. He's wanted to be a part of it. I think there are people in the university who wanted him to be a part of the university, but for whatever reason, they couldn't gulf that ravine. And now they've crossed it, and they're together. And I think it's a great, great moment, and it will be when that jersey goes up into the rafters at the PMAC. and there'll be a whole new generation of kids who will be exposed to the, to his style of play, which a lot of people view as ahead of its time. I mean, there are people who call him Steph before Steph. You know, and I think in today's modern NBA, he would have been a much bigger success than he was during his time there. But ultimately, it's just, it's a story of a guy who's a great human being who's done a lot for others. And I understand that there will be controversy about his life. I get that. But the totality of his life, he's a good man. He was a great player for LSU. And I think that if you've earned it, you should get what you've earned. And he earned his place in those Raptors.
We're talking with David Grubb, host of Hard in the Paint with David Grubb. David, this has been going on, though, for a few years. I know Shaq himself tried to, you know, try to persuade the board, try to persuade LSU to retire his friend and his former teammate's jersey, and that didn't get anywhere. And I know they're very rigid at LSU with their requirements. I mean, hell, if you don't graduate from LSU, if you don't hold a degree, you can't be inducted into their Athletics Hall of Fame, which when you look at the amount of star players that have come through football and basketball and baseball that aren't in their Athletics Hall of Fame because they did not graduate, it's astounding. So what changed here? Is this the new athletic director kind of making his presence known, taking over the job?
I'm not sure if they're going to change the Hall of Fame requirements, but I know that, like you said, there have been a lot of people who felt like that was very rigid and that a lot of great players couldn't be honored because of that. And I think that ultimately, yeah, it's a bigger issue than it was just about Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. I think that they're looking long-term at if you keep excluding the guys who leave early and who don't finish their degrees, and for a lot of athletes, it's hard to come back because you are experiencing such professional success or they finish their degree somewhere else because, you know, just life works that way. I think, you know, for the telling of history and any museum and any history, you tell the story and you can undo it. People will understand that the person didn't graduate, but nobody, we don't have those conversations, whether we're talking about current LSU players, past LSU players. I think that's not part of the conversation that we had is whether or not what their grade point average was, what their degree is in. And unfortunately, that's part of it. I'd love to discuss the academics of it more. But, you know, I think that when you're talking about the athletic accomplishments, well, let's discuss the athletic accomplishments. I don't think that you would prohibit an alum who went 3 years and let's say made a major physics discovery and went off to work for NASA without getting their degree and they changed the world and won a Nobel Prize. Would LSU not honor that person? You know, I think that you have to look at what the contributions of the individual are. Just because you didn't graduate doesn't necessarily mean you didn't make a great contribution to the university. And I think they should be looked at on a case-by-case basis.
And to further your point there, David, just because you didn't graduate doesn't mean that you have not represented the university. Because when I think of Abdul, I think of LSU. I remember growing up in the West Bank and then moving to the Baton Rouge area and practicing my free throws because I watched him do it so well. And so I think that's the other thing. When I think of him, I think of LSU first. I don't think of Denver Nuggets. I think of LSU dropping 50 points with ease. And we're talking almost 30 years later. That's what the majority of us that grew up in that generation think of him. We think of him as an LSU Tiger.
Absolutely. I mean, those days for me, you know, I remember them vividly. Like, you know, Jefferson Pilot coming on the weekends, you know, making sure me and my friends gathered around TV, making sure that we could watch those games with him. You know, honestly, you think about it, if he doesn't come to Baton Rouge, is Dale Brown coaching 2 years, you know, later, 3 years later, because they had reached hard times. LSU was a struggling program, a mediocre program before he came to Baton Rouge. And, you know, honestly, does Stanley Roberts come? Does Shaq come? Do all those things happen if he doesn't restart that whole program with his arrival? And like you said, yes, he was an ambassador for LSU basketball. The comparisons within the program between him and Pete Maravich, you know, those types of things, it's just he will forever be connected to LSU and that greatness. That singular greatness, that club of guys, when you look at Maravich, when you look at Shaq, when you look at Chris Jackson, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, you're talking about historic figures in college basketball, not just great players. You're talking about people who put up historic numbers, who belong amongst the very greatest legends of the game itself, not the SEC, not LSU. They go beyond that. And I think that that's, you know, when you say represent the university, you are absolutely correct. But that was when I really became aware. And, you know, I mean, I knew what LSU was, but when I really paid attention was when he showed up on the scene. And like you said, as a kid growing up playing basketball, I was a forward and a center. I played with the big guys, but you couldn't help but be captivated by watching this little guy do everything possible on a basketball court.
We're talking with Hard in the Paint host David Grubb right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. David, I want to switch gears. I want to keep it with LSU, and I want to get your thoughts on the controversy that's brewing since yesterday. LSU releases the video and the story about the new $28 million state-of-the-art renovation project to the locker room with the AirPods and, you know, drink holders and the whole nine yards. And that spread like wildfire in a negative way. A lot of pushback, a lot of folks there, a professor there at LSU pushing back, bringing up the stuff about how he has, you know, he has to had to buy his own Dirt Devil and that the library's in disarray. Your thoughts on the controversy that's brewing from the private donations used for the football team while the library on campus with the university is still needing repairs?
Yeah, I think people have a difficulty holding two separate discussions. The first part is not a bashing of what private people do with their money in the macro sense. If players and alumni want to and boosters want to donate money for the football program, they have every right to do so, and I don't think people have a problem with that per se. There's a second discussion on, well, if we're going to have this kind of dedication to our athletics program, why are we not getting that same dedication from our alumni and from the state of Louisiana, whose ultimate responsibility it is to make sure that its flagship university is treated as its flagship university? And that was the point that I made on Twitter yesterday, was that it's the job of the state to make sure that the students and the faculty members feel as well treated as those football players are going to be taken care of in that new space. Those are two different discussions. One doesn't negate the other. People on the athletic side have to understand that the academic part is the reason that there's an institution. You can't have a failing, crumbling institution and have a strong athletics program. Those two things don't look right. And if you're on the academic side, I think what they're just saying is, you know, we matter. We understand the money. And I don't care how many people donate money. Give $1 billion if you want to for football. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, college athletics is a business, and that part we have to continue to deal with. But, you know, I think the university, when we launch these things, we have this war of recruiting, and it's not just LSU. It's Alabama when they show off their things, and Michigan will do it, and Florida will do it, and they'll all make these videos every time they add something to their campuses. I get that. But the university has to fight harder, or the state has to get its priorities in order, because you cannot have your flagship university. You can't have that public image going out, because there are a lot of students around this state and around the country who are looking at that. And when they see that kind of disparity, it's going to keep students from coming to LSU. And that's the lifeblood. If you don't have tuition-paying students, you're going to hurt more than you're already hurting. And I think that's the negative part that LSU is dealing with, and I think that goes back to the Board of Regents, it goes back to the governor's office, it goes back to the legislature, and they need to do something about that, because, again, this is the flagship university. You wouldn't see that at the University of Texas. You wouldn't see that at the University of Florida. You wouldn't see that at Alabama. So where are the state's priorities in making sure that the academic side, that the buildings on that campus are fully renovated, fully funded, and that you can stop cutting programs every other year at LSU? It's not a battle per se between athletics and academics, but I understand how people start falling along those lines.
We're talking with David Grubb here. He contributes to CrescentCitySports.com as well as TheBirdRights.com. He's also the host of Hard in the Paint, which will be making its debut next month. David, I want to switch over to Pels. They made a move, not a surprising move by any stretch of the imagination, but one that gives them some quality depth and a veteran presence when they re-signed Darius Miller yesterday. Your thoughts on that move?
I understand them bringing Darius back because, again, they needed shooting. They want to make sure they have enough of that. He's a guy who's experienced in the system. I thought the number was high for Darius. And it's an option. There's an option on the second season for the team. I think that the number being high is partially as an enticement for his contract to possibly be moved later during the season. You know, he and Etuan Moore have two very attractive expiring deals that could be positioned if the Pelicans are looking for something else or as they go into next season to make sure they have room to re-sign, you know, guys that they want to keep long-term, like a Brandon Ingram or possibly extending, you know, one of their other young players. So I get it. I don't think he's a needle mover in that regard. There's going to be a lot of competition at that small forward spot between obviously Brandon Ingram is going to get the majority of those minutes, probably 25 to 30 a night. And then in that backup role, you've got Josh Hart, you've got Darius Miller, you've got even Etuan Moore back there. You've got J.J. Redick who's going to see minutes at the small forward. So it's going to be a lot of competition for Darius to try to get on the court. But, again, it's not a needle mover for me one way or the other. The Pelicans had the money to spend, and he's a guy that they're familiar with, so it's a low risk for them.
Wrapping things up here with David Grubb on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. David, one last question. Top overall pick, Duke phenom Zion Williamson, is going to be skipping the USA basketball select team training camp and everything. He just wants to be focused on getting ready for the season. This seems to kind of go in line with what David Griffin announced after Summer League had wrapped up for Zion, that they're going to focus in on his conditioning. Is this simply a move by the Pels to get Zion as in-season ready as possible between now and the start of the season in late October?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. He's behind the curve in getting ready. Because of all the time he had to take off on the circuit, going to the awards and all those things. So he didn't have the time to just dedicate himself to working out. And that's not a criticism of Zion Williamson. He's 19 years old. And the transition from he's never played more than 32 games in a season, whether it's going back to high school or last year at Duke. So to go from 32 to 82 is huge. So to spend as much time possible on conditioning is a good thing for him. It'll also help him get to know his teammates because there will be – obviously, the rest of those young guys will be in New Orleans for a lot of that time as well, working out as they prepare for training camp, which is a good thing. And I think ultimately, you know, there was a comment made by Chris Carter this morning on Fox Sports, and he was talking about when you're in great physical condition, it's a lot easier to learn because your body isn't tensing up and you're not fatigued. And I think that's the part of it. They want Zion to be able to focus on learning his responsibilities offensively and defensively, and the best way to do that by the time they get to training camp is to have his body ready. We knew he was a little bit heavy, so I think that if he can get down to probably about 275 and put a little more definition, I call him country strong. You know, you see those kids who show up, whether it's basketball or football, where they haven't lifted a weight, but they're huge and they're strong and they have that natural ability. Well, it's their job now to get it so that he can last, have his strength and his endurance last over the course of 6-7 months of basketball. So I think it's a mature decision. Team USA will be there. If Zion is healthy and lives up to the expectations, it'll be there multiple times for him down the road. So I think it's a great thing for him to do to get himself prepared for the NBA and not worry about international competition right now.
David, tremendous stuff as always. Appreciate you making time out for us. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Anytime. Thank you so much.
That's David Grubb, contributing writer for CrescentCitySports.com as well as TheBirdRights.com and host of the soon-to-debut Hard in the Paint with David Grubb down there in New Orleans. We got to hit a break. When we come back, we'll close out hour number two. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. I got some great news, guys. We just gotten word that 103.7 The Game will be involved in a great charity event later today, and you're invited to join. The Healing House will be making its Tinny Tuesday stop by Ruffino's on the River, and Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love will be in the house starting at 4 p.m. So stop by, help crown the best martini in town at Ruffino's, enjoy live sports talk, and most importantly, give back to a great cause at the Healing House. That's today. Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports starting at 4, all live from a great charity event at Ruffino's on the River. Hour number 2 is in the books. Coming up, we'll close things out, starting off with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network. He joins us to lead off hour number 3. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback Eli Manning.
You know, it's my job to do my job as best I can, but to be a good teammate. You know, I've always been great in the quarterback room, helping everybody out.
Former LSU and Saints star wide receiver Devery Henderson.
To get that opportunity, man, and get that call on draft day for seeing that 504 number, it was something else, man. When I got that call, man, it was real humbling, and you know, being able to play for Maine State and be still close to home.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome to hour number 3 of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. It's 8:03, and I want to say thank you for joining us, making us a part of your morning. We've had a tremendous show so far. We looked back yesterday at Sunbelt Media Day, played back a couple of interviews that the good brother Ben Love conducted with Deuce Wallace and Bam Jackson, Raging Cajun stars. Yesterday on the program, we played those. We spent a good portion of time taking phone calls and discussing the new LSU locker room, which has created a bit of a social media firestorm. And then we also talked about one of the legends of the game at LSU getting his jersey finally retired. We'll touch on a couple of those topics with our next guest. He's one of the best in the business. He is part of the Louisiana Radio Network. He's also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, which you can listen to tonight right here on 103.7 The Game. It's our good friend, the one and only, Jeff Palermo. Jeff, how you doing this morning, brother?
Doing well, Raymond. How was your visit to New Orleans?
Any visit to New Orleans is always memorable and enjoyable, my friend. It was great. It was a little bit more relaxing than the 4 days I went through in Hoover, I can tell you that.
I guess I would imagine so.
Jeff, I want to go back because we didn't get a chance to get your reaction from SEC Media Days concerning LSU and the week in general. So I want to start there. What did you think how LSU fared at Media Days and the reaction in particularly to Joe Burrow there at SEC Media Days last week?
Well, Joe Burrow is one of the most quotable, one of the more interesting guys that you'll cover in college athletics. The kid speaks his mind, and as you heard with him talking about black holes and quantum physics or whatever the heck he was talking about, I mean, he's just not all about football as well. So he's a very interesting guy, looking forward to hearing what he has to say throughout the season, and I think he'll be a little bit more vocal this year than he even was last year just because of the comfort level that he has this season. And it's his last year, and he's got really nothing to lose. So if there's something that he particularly doesn't like, or he may speak out to the media to express his frustrations if things are going a little rough. But you always like guys that are candid. When you cover them, you don't come across it very often. You get a lot of canned answers, especially when you go to these media days. It's a lot of coach speak. It's a lot of player speak. And Joe Burrow's refreshing when it comes to that. As far as Coach Ed Orgeron, I don't think there was anything groundbreaking that he said last Monday. Just feels really good about where his program is heading. Obviously feels probably much better than he did this time. Than he did last year when he really wasn't sure who his quarterback was working in, was bringing Steve Ensminger back for his first season as the offensive coordinator after the Matt Canada experiment blew up on him. And I think he feels good about some of the guys he has returning defensively. Obviously, Grant Delpit, who he called one of the best returning players in the country at safety. And moving to a 4-3 defensively, or playing a little more 4-3. I think that was a little bit of the news that he broke there defensively, and would like to hear Dave Aranda's take on the reason on why maybe a little more 4-3 this season compared to previous years.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo, the Louisiana Radio Network, also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, look, the old ball coach wasn't there this week. Les Miles was not there. So a lot of the quote machines were not there. Anybody else stand out to you from SEC Media Days, you watching them from afar last week?
Well, yeah, I think it has lost a little bit of, you know, you're right, Les Miles, Steve Spurrier. Those guys were really entertaining to talk with or to hear from. Maybe the Les act got a little bit stale there towards the end, but I mean, most of these guys now are pretty straightforward. I don't want to say buttoned up. You know, Jimbo Fisher talks a mile a minute. You know, Nick Saban always has something interesting to say, or sometimes even hypocritical when he talks about the transfer portal. I mean, we're talking about a coach who basically left the Miami Dolphins for Alabama at the end of the season. So, you know, so really out of the 14 coaches that were there, I don't think any of them really said anything interesting. You know, I was thinking about this, it might have been yesterday, that you know, last year, after Big Ten Media Days, that's when we had the whole Urban Meyer controversy, and that really became such a huge story in the month of August and into early September, and really kind of shadowed the entire college football season last year. I would imagine out of all the Media Days that we've had, we're not going to see anything that comes close to that, any kind of lingering questions or, you know, usually these Media Days, you kind of forget about them. 2-3 weeks after, especially once fall camp begins or preseason camp begins, you kind of forget about what these coaches said, and then it's all about the process of these guys going through the preseason camp and, you know, who's winning certain position battles and so forth.
I'm talking with Jeff Palermo here of the Louisiana Radio Network, also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, you know, Grant Delpit, Coach O talked about it last week about how he's a phenomenal player. He's been named to the Jim Thorpe Award watch list. I want to ask you this. We know he's going to rack up on the Defensive Player of the Year awards. Does he have a chance to be a legitimate Heisman dark horse?
Well, I think if he has a huge game against Texas, let's say if he gets a pick six there or something like that. You know, last year he had 5 sacks and 5 interceptions. I mean, I think he needs to up those totals. I just think he needs to be your ultimate playmaker, kind of like what Tyrann Mathieu was, a guy that always seems to be around the ball. What benefited Tyrann Mathieu is that he also returned punts. Grant Delpit doesn't do that. Desmond Howard was such a big player on special teams. So I think it's very difficult for a defensive player who is strictly just on defense and doesn't get a chance to return kicks or even line up at wide receiver a couple times a game or something like that. When they are just strictly a defensive player, they really need to have a huge season. So he'll need to make a big impact in the game against Texas to get him on the radar. And like I say, scoring a couple touchdowns, interceptions, fumble recoveries, obviously in on tackles, forced fumbles. I mean, he's going to have to get huge numbers in a lot of those statistics. But even if he doesn't and still has a really good season for LSU, that doesn't mean he's not one of the best players in college football. It's just that it's an award that the Heisman Trophy typically goes to the best offensive player, and what we've seen here lately is it's usually a quarterback, and it's pretty tough in this day and age of college football where guys are throwing for 4,000 yards and putting up huge numbers, and offenses are getting off a lot of plays that allow quarterbacks to complete a lot of passes, put up big passing yards, score a lot of touchdowns. It's just tough for any other position to compete with those kind of numbers when you see him at the end of the year. And that's the fact that the quarterback position is just the focal point of the team. And when the team does good, and if the quarterback plays well, it's hard not to give that person the Heisman Trophy.
Talking with Jeff Palermo, the Louisiana Radio Network, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, I want to get your thoughts on the controversy that stemmed from LSU unveiling its $28 million upgrade, state-of-the-art locker room. There's been a lot of back and forth between LSU players and fans. There's been back and forth between LSU players and faculty at LSU. Your thoughts on everything that's being involved with this?
Well, I'm not surprised that there is a bit of a pushback here against this from faculty, from students. I guess I'm a little surprised to see the players so openly defend it. And I know the coaching staff really can't control these guys, what they say on Twitter. But I guess I would have thought that maybe the players would have just been and they have expressed huge gratitude for this facility. I think they realize how lucky they are to have these pods, this first-class nutrition center, the meeting rooms and all that kind of stuff. I think they are very appreciative of the people who have donated to make this happen. But I think they should just be appreciative of it and not have to try to defend it. And I don't think it's their position to defend it. I think it's the administration. I think it's a question that needs to be asked at Orgeron. I think it's a question that needs to be asked to Scott Woodward. I think it's a question that needs to be asked to the president, F. King Alexander, on why we're able to raise, you know, $23, $28 million to build this 21st Century Football Operations Center while the library continues to crumble and fall apart. Why is that? And I guess as a society, we need to ask that question.
People care more about football than they do the library.
I agree. But I also see the idea of without a university, you don't have a football team. I understand
Agreed.
That argument as well. And that's just the way. And the thing is with the football team is you see tangible results, right? When you donate to a football program, whatever it may be, whether it's $100 or $100,000, and you see the team go out and win 10 games, you feel like that was that was well worth money that you spent. You donate money to the university for academic reasons, and well, you don't know if that's raising GPAs or more kids or grad. I mean, those numbers come out, but I don't know if it doesn't translate the same as wins and losses. So. Very interesting. I had a feeling it would erupt. Again, I guess I'm just surprised that the players themselves have been as vocal as they have been. You know, Joe Burrow ended up having to delete a tweet that he made to LSU professor Bob Mann, who's been someone that has been very outspoken about some of the facilities on the academic side. And then the other thing you have to remember, again, yeah, it's private money, and also LSU does give back to the academic side of the university. And those that are complaining about poor facilities on campus, they do need to remember that, hey, the athletic department is giving money, and if the football team does well, that means more money for the athletic department, which means more money then for the academic side. So I don't think this is a controversy that will go away, and I'd say the next controversy that erupts out of all this, Raymond, is if this team doesn't play as well to the expectations that have been put out there, there's going to be complaints that they have it too good there, that they're too comfortable, they're too soft. They should sleep on a hardwood bench instead of this nice cushioned pod that they're getting.
Oh yeah, you can see that from a mile away, right, Jeff?
Yeah,
you can see that.
So that one's coming up too. Once after you get a couple losses this season.
We're wrapping things up here with Jeff Palermo, the Louisiana Radio Network, joining us via the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, I want your thoughts on the jersey retirement that was announced officially yesterday. Long time coming for a lot of us that grew up during that era and watched him play. Why is this happening now? And is this somehow affected by the new athletic director taking over?
It might be Scott Woodward pushing the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame election board to do this. I mean, and Scott Woodward obviously quoted in the press release saying it was a unanimous decision. Probably when you look at it, there are four guys that currently have their numbers retired. And when you talk about the top five players to ever play at LSU, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf is one of those guys, and his jersey is certainly deserving when you look at the numbers. You wonder if his religious beliefs didn't put a pause on this, have this occur a little bit later than it should have. Scott Woodward comes in with a lot of fanfare, so a lot of decisions that he makes or a lot of things that he'll push, I think a lot of people will applaud and not really criticize right off the bat. And so I think it's well-deserving. Look forward to it. He was obviously a fantastic player to average 30 points a game and still only be the only freshman in college basketball history to average over 30 points per game is something else and something we'll probably never see again. I don't want to say it never, but that's going to be a very hard feat to accomplish again. And it is a deserving honor, probably maybe 10, 15 years late, but better late than ever.
Jeff, appreciate your time as always, my friend. I guess you just won't have anything whatsoever to talk about tonight on Tiger Rag Radio, right?
Yeah.
It'll be a boring night, right? Nothing whatsoever to discuss.
No, yeah, we'll continue to look ahead to the upcoming season, dive more into this social media firestorm over the new training facility at LSU, and also talk about Chris Jackson and having his jersey retired.
Jeff, appreciate the time as always, brother. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.
Jeff Palermo, Louisiana Radio Network, touching on all things LSU for us there. Appreciate his time. We got to hit a break, but when we come back here on RP3 and Company, Houston Astros had themselves a hell of a night last night on Apollo night. We'll talk about it right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Pitch, and that ball's hit well. That one's to the left. That one is gone! Three-run homer for Diaz. Welcome back.
How good does that have to feel for Aledmys Diaz?
Welcome back to RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III. Cody Schutz is the producer extraordinaire behind the man behind the glass. Ooh, that could be a name of your podcast. The man behind the glass, how I make RP3 appear competent on the air. I'd follow you. I'd listen to that podcast. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1, free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Coming up, we'll have some Saints talk at 8:32. Our friend from the Saints Happy Hour podcast, the one and only Andrew Juge, will be joining us. Training camp is this week. We'll talk a little Houston Astros baseball, though. Because after the post-All-Star game slump that the team was experiencing, they have got things back on track. Remember, they split that four-game series against the Texas Rangers on the road. Then they split the four-game series against the Los Angeles of Anaheim / San Diego Credit Union Angels on the road. They come back home. They get a three-game sweep of the Rangers. And then they start off a series with Oakland, the real threat in the American League West. They crushed them yesterday, 11-1. Astros are now 65-37 overall, while the A's fall to 57-44. Here's a recap of the Apollo 11 night. 11 strikeouts for Gerrit Cole. The 11th win for Gerrit Cole. 11 runs for the Houston Astros. The 11th run scored on the 11th batter of the third inning. 11th hit of the game drove in the 11th run.
If you're a fan of Stranger Things, all of that is even cooler to you.
Yeah, yes, it is. And I am a fan of that show. It's a terrific show.
11 is a good number.
So the Strohs.
Hey, what year did we go to the moon in, Ray?
It's 50 years ago.
Yeah, 1969.
Yeah, man. 50 years ago. The Astros celebrated last night. It was Apollo 11 night there at the ballpark at the Big Juice Box. And as I said, Gerrit Cole, tremendous. 11 strikeouts, 11th win. The Astros scored 11 runs. Once again, the 11th run scored on the 11th batter of the third inning, and the 11th hit of the game drove in the 11th run. Say what? Strohs just are absolutely killing it. Gerrit Cole became the first Astros pitcher to have back-to-back 200K seasons since Daryl Kyle back in 96-97. It is July, and he has 200 strikeouts. July. As good as this team is, could this guy get to 300? I don't know.
Verlander's over here like, dude, I'm trying to say the balls are juiced. Stop striking everybody out.
Dude, I'm trying to win the Cy Young. What you doing? Gerrit Cole is coming on, man. 11 wins, 200-plus strikeouts now. Phenomenal season for the Astros' underrated star. That's another guy. Started off his career elsewhere, was okay, comes to the Astros, becomes phenomenal. That's called really good scouting and development and managing. That's what that's called. Astros return to action tonight, and you can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game. A's at Astros. Astro launch 6:30. First pitch 7:10. You listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game. And following the Astros game, we'll have Tiger Rag Radio for you as well. So make sure to keep it live and local right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Andrew Juge will join us next from the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on RP3 and Company. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We've talked a lot of college football. We talked Raging Cajuns to lead off today's show. We talked LSU in the locker room, controversy, social media firestorm. We've squeezed in some Pels, some Houston Astros, and that ridiculous Bleacher Report list of the top 25 greatest quarterbacks of all time, which we will get our next guest opinion on, and I'm sure he has one. Cody Schuetz, yes, sir. Would you like to update the people on our poll question?
Actually, Raymond, before we get to Andrew here, just one second. Breaking news, PFT, Pro Football Talk, putting out on the Twitterverse that a sad day in the NFL. The butt fumble himself, Mark Sanchez, has officially retired from professional football. So there's your breaking news.
He gave us so much.
He did. Him and Rex Ryan, what a duo. But alas, he has retired. The butt fumble, no more a professional football player actively.
We miss you, Mark Sanchez. We miss you. And I hope that Mark Sanchez, the butt fumbler, will reconsider and decide to join the new XFL, because he just seems like he'd be perfect in Vince McMahon's football league.
That's a good call.
Thank you.
Good call.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, man. It's time for us to get that pro football talk. Keep it moving. We'll update the poll question before we close out today's show, because we need to welcome on our next guest. He is the man behind the Saints Happy Hour podcast. It's our good friend, the one and only Andrew Juge. Andrew, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm good, guys. And listen, you know, I'm cool with you calling Mark Sanchez the butt fumble, but you know, I'm a little disappointed that there wasn't at least one reference to him being the Sanchez.
Oh, the Sanchez. I loved the Sanchez. That was great. he's the Sanchez. You get it? Because it's his last name, but as franchise quarterback.
Remember when the Jets were good? You remember?
Barely.
Oh, Rex Ryan and Mark Sanchez. We were blessed to have them both in our lives. Andrew, training camp this week, brother. Rookies already reported at the end of last week. Vets will be coming this week. I know you've been waiting for this moment. What are you most excited about? What are you most looking forward to later this week in Metairie at the training facility?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and this perspective is one that I picked up just in the last week. The NFL Network re-aired some of these, the two playoff games the Saints played in earlier this year. And so I had a chance to re-watch those games, and I actually never had a chance to really revisit them. And certainly with the Rams game in particular, I know a lot of Saints fans have sworn they will never watch that again. I found it somewhat cathartic, you know, to kind of revisit that and see how those games went. And, you know, the one thing that really stood out to me, and obviously the no-call, it still hurts, but the one thing that really stood out to me was just how much the offensive line was struggling throughout the playoffs, really in the Eagles game too. And, you know, one thing that really stood out to me was just Max Unger was just not himself. And so, you know, now it makes sense. He retired. Obviously, physically, he wasn't there. But to get to your question, yeah, I kind of left watching those two playoff games with the perspective of, man, this offensive line is really not what we hoped it would be. And I think it's a big question mark coming into the season now. You look at what's changed, and really it's just McCoy at center. We expect him to be the starter and replace Unger. And listen, Unger was not the Unger of old. I remember going to the Greenbrier and seeing him go one-on-ones in training camp against Tyler Davison and John Jenkins and Akeem Hicks and destroying all of those guys. And that's a far cry from what I saw in that game where he was getting whipped up front. So, you know, McCoy doesn't have to be better than Max Unger at his peak. He needs to be better than Max Unger last season, especially late, and I believe he can be. But then you look across the rest of the offensive line, and Armstead has a long injury history. He was banged up. Andres Pete, in his short career, has had an injury history. He was playing with a broken hand and was a little shaky in those games. You know, Ryan Ramczyk, he's played all 16 games twice now, but he was banged up in those games, and he had some shaky moments. And Larry Warford, by all accounts, there's a chance he's going to start training camp on PUP because of his injury. So you look at McCoy, who's been the addition, the draft pick. Nick Easton is kind of the free agent they went out and got. But you know, I need to see a couple things from this team that I'm excited about really getting an eye on, and that's how the offensive line looks. And the second thing I'll say is, you know, Drew Brees, especially in the second half of that Rams game, really struggled. Now, he wasn't getting any time, and so you wonder, is it just that he was rattled? Was he injured? Was it maybe a little bit of both? But I really thought in the second half of that Rams game, he just was not pushing the ball down the field with any quality at all. He wasn't himself. The accuracy wasn't there. And so, you know, it's not going to take much. I mean, I'll just need to see him in the third preseason game, get a clean pocket, get some nice time to throw the football, and throw it 15, 20 yards down the field, push the ball, and make a good, accurate pass. I only need to see it once, Raymond, and then I'll feel good. And I'll say, okay, Drew's back. But with the lasting impression being the finality of that playoff game, I'm nervous about Brees pushing the ball down the field, and I'm nervous about the offensive line. So those, to me, are two things that have to get healthy and respond and look good starting in preseason.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, I want to ask you about that offensive line and further that discussion. You know, they poach away Eason from the Vikings. He's versatile. He was banged up last year, but versatile, can play guard and center. They draft McCoy. Obviously, Unger retires. Where do you see the makeup heading into training camp? Who are your starters across the offensive line?
Well, I think if you're going from left to right, you're looking at Armstead, Pete, McCoy. I do believe the rookie center gets to start there, and he's been playing with the ones in mini camps, so he's already getting the reps there. So I do believe he will start. And I think Warford right now is penciled in at right guard, and then you've got obviously Ramczyk at right tackle. So left to right, those are the starters for me. Right now, I view Nick Easton as kind of your Senio Calamete, you know, Zach Strieff former role. of your six offensive linemen. Maybe he's a jumbo tight end in certain situations.
Okay.
He's kind of the primary guy off the bench. But right now, Larry Warford hasn't been practicing. So until he's back, I think Easton kind of gets plugged in as your right guard. But those, to me, are the starters.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Saints begin training camp this week with vets and rookies. Andrew, give me a veteran that needs to have a good training camp that's not named Cam Meredith.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think special teams is going to be a big battle this year. So, you know, just with the amount of talent they have, I think Banjo and Justin Hardy, you know, guys that you would think are core special teams guys that would normally make the roster, they're going to have to play well. And we talked about Teron Armstead. I think this is a big season for him. You know, and Andres Pete, too, you know, he's in a contract here. So I think those are important. But if there's one, really two guys that stand out to me, actually, I would say it's the free agent signing. I think Jared Cook was brought into this building specifically to enhance the passing game, to give Drew Brees a big tight end threat over the middle. And so he needs to deliver. And I think it's really important that Jared Cook deliver. And then you look at Latavius Murray, the other free agent signing. He's replacing Mark Ingram. Those are big shoes to fill. And so, you know, I know you're leading with that question, maybe saying, you know, who doesn't make this roster, who's a threat to not make this roster. And obviously Jared Cook and Latavius Murray are making this team. But I think ultimately the success or failure of this offense is going to be tied to how much Latavius Murray can come close to what Mark Ingram gave the Saints and how much Jared Cook can enhance the passing game where they maybe struggled last year.
We're on with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, they have a terrific young core in the secondary. Marshawn Lattimore, obviously they traded for Eli Apple. They got Patrick Robinson coming back that's going to give them depth. They got the Williams boys as well. But there's a guy that they drafted out of Florida that's making a ton of noise and did so during rookie camp and mini camp. Who is going to be put on notice by the rookie out of Florida in the back end of the defense?
Yeah, well, I think right now, you know, you're talking about Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, and I think, you know, his potential appeal is as a nickel guy, potentially playing on passing down. So, you know, you talk about the subs and who that puts on notice. I think Von Bell, first and foremost, as a strong safety, you know, there's a role for him there maybe where they are maybe switched out occasionally. So I think Von Bell maybe needs to be a little worried. And then more specifically, your nickel guys, which would be P.J. Williams or Patrick Robinson. I think this is going to be hotly contested in terms of having a role on this team, having a chance to play, and getting some reps. And so this will be another interesting one to watch in camp. And, I mean, gosh, it's unbelievable to think that August 9th is the first preseason game. So we're so close to that happening. And, you know, I think to some degree injuries will maybe dictate who gets roles where. And certainly, you know, these battles will be really interesting to watch. But it'll be the play on the field. These guys are going to get a chance to do their thing. I think he's going to have to play pretty well. I mean, when you look at what P.J. Williams was able to do at the end of last year and you look at what Patrick Robinson has done throughout his career, especially after he left the Saints, those are really capable players, and they're veterans, and they know how to look good in training camp. So I think there'll be a role for him later in the season. But, you know, I just mentioned a bunch of names that the Saints are excited about, and so it's good to have competition, and that speaks to their depth.
We're talking with Andrew Juge here of the Saints Happy Hour podcast on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, I have to ask you, brother, did you see Bleacher Report's story on the top 25 NFL quarterbacks of all time? Are you privy to this just absolute train wreck?
I haven't. So Drew Brees is number one.
Real-time reaction from Andrew. Here we go. All right, Andrew. So Bleacher Report decided to put together their top 25 NFL quarterbacks of all time, as I stated. Top five, not surprising, right? You got Tom Brady, you got your Peyton Manning, Joe Montana, Dan Marino, Johnny Unitas. There's nothing wrong with that top five. I'd have John Elway in that top five, but that's just me. Well, let me give you the rest and buckle up for this journey. Troy Aikman, number 6. Joe Namath, 7. Captain America, wow. Roger Staubach, 8. Terry Bradshaw, 9. Kurt Warner, 10. Drew Brees is 11. John Elway is 12. Steve Young is 13. And Jim Kelly is 14. We'll get to the back end of the list because I want your reaction on that because you may lose your mind and have a stroke on air. But give me your reaction there, what I just told you.
It's already happened. I'm speechless. I am speechless. To not have Drew Brees in your top 10, it's just so typical of the bias and how underrated he is. It's criminal, really. And, you know, I'm surprised. A lot of these lists a lot of times overinflate Aaron Rodgers. So I'm surprised. Usually that's the one that sends me up a wall.
Is oh, that, just
you know,
wait.
People say Rodgers is better than Brees because I always ask the question, like, how can you defend that? Like, what statistically has he done? What records has he broken of Brees? They both have won Super Bowl. So, anyway, I won't get into that comparison. But, you know, I just think at the end of the day, that's a list that's maybe trying to force in some old guys that were in an era where quarterback play wasn't as good. But I will leave you with this, Raymond. When you talk about this era being the quarterback era where statistics are inflated and quarterbacks are performing at a level that they've never performed at before. And granted, part of that is the rules. Part of that is they can't get hit. Part of that is receivers can't get touched. So I understand all that. But when you say that this is the quarterback era, and statistically, Brees is the best one. He has all the records. You can make an argument for Brady being better because of Super Bowls. You can make an argument that Peyton Manning and Brees are close. But you can also make the argument that Brees is better than both of them because of what he's done statistically. And so at the end of the day, if you're going to tell me statistically that Brees is the best in the era where quarterbacks are the best, if you don't have him in the top 10, I think the list is invalid, period, end of story.
Well, I'm going to further your anger here because here's the rest of your top 25. Big Ben at 15, all time. Philip Rivers, then Brett Favre, then Aaron Rodgers, Tony Romo, Drew Bledsoe at 20, Carson Palmer at 21, Bob Greasy, who didn't have to pass the ball, at 22, Phil Simms at 23, Warren, wildly underrated, Moon at 24, and to cap things off, the 25th greatest quarterback of all time, Andrew, is Alex Smith.
No.
Just no.
Andrew's like, I don't want to do this interview anymore. Raymond, you've ruined my entire morning is now shot. I have to cancel work. I need to go lay out and take a nap on the veranda to recover from this nonsense. Yeah, Andrew.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Andrew, brother, I appreciate you, man.
Was Otto Graham on this list?
No, he was not.
No Donovan McNabb, no Steve McNair.
Lots of omissions on there. But hey, Drew Bledsoe
was on
there.
You could argue Otto Graham is top 5. Certainly top 10.
I know. Bleacher Report apparently huffing paint thinner while making lists. So. Andrew, enjoy training camp later this week, brother. We'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys.
I was so hoping he hadn't read the list.
Know how to react to that. He thought. I think at some point he thought you were ribbing him. He thought you were. I'm being punked.
He just said no. Just no. No. Oh, man. We got to hit a break. We will close up shop on this tremendous Tuesday edition of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Hey, guys, reminder, great news. We've just gotten word that 103.7 The Game will be involved in a great charity event later today, and you're invited to join. The Healing House will be making its Tinny Tuesday stop by Ruffino's on the river and Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love will be in the house starting at 4 p.m. all the way up to 6:30. Stop by, help crown the best martini in town at Ruffino's, enjoy live sports talk, and most importantly, give back to a great cause at the Healing House. That's today. Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports starting at 4, all live from a great charity event there at Ruffino's on the River. Ben's going to be there at Ruffino's on the River for that charity event for Healing House. He is going to lead you into Astro Launch, which will begin at 6:30. A's at Astros will start at 7:10, first pitch. And then following the completion of the Astros game will be Tiger Rag Radio. So we got tremendous lineup for you this evening. Cody Schutz, you'd be happy to know that Andrew Juge just texted me, Alex Smith, WTF.
Well, I'm glad he texted that and did not express that verbally.
I've made Andrew's day. He's really.
And the worst part about it is you kind of feel bad for Alex Smith in this situation because he didn't do anything. He didn't ask to be put as the 25th best quarterback of all time, and yet he's catching all this flack. And he's hurt. Can't do it. Can't even run.
He may never play again. By the way, Alex Smith over Eli Manning?
Eli Manning not on the list at all. Didn't make it.
Okay, I mean, Eli's a little...
Didn't make the cut.
Cody Schutz, give the people quickly an update on our poll question. We put it up there on 1037thegame.com. You can still vote on it today. We'll give you final tallies tomorrow, but give the people the information, sir.
It is a 50-50 split on the feelings of the state-of-the-art locker room for the Tigers. Is it too much? 50-50. Yes and no.
Please go vote at 1037thegame.com. You'll see our poll question on the bottom right-hand side of the homepage. Tremendous show. I want to thank David Grubb, Jeff Palermo, and Andrew Juge for joining us. We'll do it all again tomorrow. Cody, thank you. Y'all be safe out there. Enjoy yourself today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.